Welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks. I just wanted to read to you that I've been following the situation in Guyana, as you know, and I'm told that the Court of Appeal started to hear the case at 1 p.m. It's now 9 minutes past one, so that would already be underway. The Guyana Elections Commission, the case being heard by the Guyana Court of Appeal will be determining whether or not the Guyana Elections Commission, which is GCOM, should declare the results using tabulated figures of 460,000 votes, or decide whether votes not tainted by alleged impersonation should be used instead. So that is a matter before the court. Mr. Loinfield, and I made a mistake earlier and referred to him as Mr. Lointhal. Mr. Loinfield is the correct name, has not submitted his report as instructed by the chairman in a previous conversation. So he has not complied. The matter is now before the court, and it's left to be determined whether or not the court will impose or lift the injunction and allow for Mr. Lointhal to determine how he deals with the matter. Loinfield. Mr. Loinfield decides how he deals with the matter. So that's the situation where we are in Guyana. Of course, I've already offered an opinion on it. We wait anxiously to see what the court will determine. And in the meantime, as I said, I also received word from an OAS source that the President Granger has effectively conceded. He has apparently removed himself from President's House and his staff along with him. The torch, one could argue, is being carried by Joe Harmon, who I believe is a former major or brigadier in the Defense Force of Guyana. He is the front person dealing with the battle currently, because he is the campaign manager, or was the campaign manager for APNU. He apparently, along with Kathy Hughes, is who's another little piece of Beijing in there, apparently. The two of them are the two point people currently. One could argue the boys on the burning deck, or people on the burning deck. That was a gender-specific statement. Currently, in terms of carrying the flame for APNU in Guyana. Sadly, I think that they're fighting a losing battle, but they're fighting on nonetheless. So that's the situation from Georgetown, and we continue to watch with great interest. Down to Brass Tacks, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, sir. How are you?
Mr. Vikram.
Yes, sir.
Can I call you Peter?
I would love you to call me Peter.
From here, you're on the radio. Mm-hmm.
That's fine.
All right. Peter, I want to say that this is a fantastic program.
Thank you,
sir. I would love to see the day that social studies in school, part of this program, is included, incorporated, because it would give people a chance to hear some of the most illogical things that you'll ever hear. You'll also hear some fantastic things. But when you have callers who would use words like dispossessed, okay, and people should be paid for their possessions, and to know that he is coming directly out of a heritage where his ancestors were possessions, Peter, they were possessions, they were even branded possessions by people and the church. When I finish here, I know people will be calling me the Antichrist, okay, because when people do not understand their history, and that is why Gabby Carter would be a man who would go down in history as fighting for causes. Wendell McLean and those sort of people would go down in history as fighting for causes. But when you have people like Straker's Tenantry coming in and talking, and young people who are educated by this system that we have are listening, and then you hear other people calling and saying, oh, why the young people ain't come to the march? I am 62 years old. My son is 29. My daughter is 27. My daughter said she heard that coming, and it disgusts her. Because when you apply to have a march and somebody can look at you and tell you, you can only bring 12 people, you shouldn't even consider going. But they want to know, the young people want to know, when is there going to be a march to stop them from sending to jail young people for a $10 bag of marijuana and a spliff, and completely wrecking their lives. And yet people steal millions of dollars in this country every day and don't get a day. What is your feedback on that?
You said that people might call you the Antichrist for saying that, but wait.
No, because the Christian religion, I came across a quote during this COVID. Black people hate everything about slavery.
Exactly,
except Christianity.
Yeah.
Except Christianity, you know.
But there's nothing offensive about that, but that's true.
Yes, but they don't even, I know it's true.
The Church of England was actively involved in the slave trade. This Church of England benefited financially from the slave trade. And it's the Church of England that gave rise to the Anglican Church. It's the Church of England that we have known as the Anglican Church in Barbados. That is the major church in this country. So to say that they were involved in it is not untrue. But that's a big part of the reason why it had nothing to do with it.
Right, up to now, people do not even understand what a papal bill is, what a papal decree is and was. You know, people still...
Yeah, but they can read the Bible and they can see...
Right.
They can see expressions of support for slavery in the Bible. They can read the history books and they can know that there was a man called Christopher Codrington who had slaves on a plantation that is now a theological college in Barbados. So there's no secret.
But, Peter, people give you a book. People give you a book. Where a man killed his brother.
Mm-hmm.
Huh? And he was told he had to leave this place. And he said he was frightened. And the God of the Bible, tell him, nah, I can give you a mark. Give him a mark of protection and let him go up in the rest of the world. He left there and went to the land and not married a woman. And this begat, begatting. Because that is the first thing that sows the seed of apartheid and a chosen people. You know? And when you can get a book and a God that has only human characteristics.
Yeah, but that's a battle. I have determined for myself that's a battle that Christians need to fight among themselves. Because to me, they will expend considerable energy and time trying to explain away the Christian references to slavery, the Christian references to homicide, the Christian references to murder, to genocide, to infanticide, to all of these things, to polygamy, multiple marriages, children outside of wedlock. You know, there is a lot that they have to explain in there. But that's for them and not for me. My thing is that I don't quite understand why in 2020, you know, people who know better need to feel that they're obligated to beat their children because they believe the Bible tells them to do so. They're obligated to support capital punishment because somebody said an eye for an eye or tooth for tooth. They feel obligated to hate homosexuals because they believe that God destroys Sodom and Gomorrah because of homosexuality. So those are my challenges. And I get that all of these things are in the Bible, but I also think that, you know, we need to come to a stage where we can say, well, you know, let's see if we can take a lesson from Jesus' life, and let's see if we can build our own existence around it and draw on that, as opposed to, you know, reaching into these verses and so on that create challenges. What do you think?
No, I think you are speaking from a context of what you would say great reality. But another reality is that when young people go there and want to give their views, they know they are going to be victimized because we have no separation of church and state. We have prime minister, this body, everybody who links directly church and state. Okay? So anytime a young person wants to go there and contribute, have something to say about COVID, about anything, okay? And then you can hear people say, the Lord put this in motion. If the Lord put it in motion, why are you telling people to wear masks? Why are you telling people to do this and do that? And then 6 months later, when you realize, or 6 weeks later, when you realize that the whole thing can fall down, and the 1.7% of the people gain dead, but you can't economically hold straight no more. All of a sudden, you telling people send school to children. School will open this thing. We can bring in tourists again. All that sort of thing. There's no plan for a worst-case scenario that I've heard yet.
Yeah.
The only plan that I hear for a worst-case scenario is, Barbados can't survive by itself. Okay? So we can't decide to plant, we can't decide to raise. This thing is... the ignorance is...
You think, sir, that it is possible for us to become a crop-based economy coming out of all of this?
Not only a crop-based economy, but a fully subsistent economy. We have...
You think that's possible?
Yes, it is possible. It is not easy.
How do I play a part in that?
Okay, the the so-called leaders first. How you play a part in that is that they won't be pay for economists. This you can only do it through socialism. And when it's socialism, I mean real life socialism, where your back is against the wall. There's nothing else you can do. You're going to raise all the animals, all the birds. That we have enough water resources. What we don't have is efficient managing of the resources.
I think you're misunderstanding. You're misunderstanding my question. I'm saying, how does a person like me play a part in that? I'm a political consultant. My skills. Offering services, the vast majority of which are offered outside of Barbados. That's how I earn a living. Are you saying that I need to be retrained to plant to dig potatoes? And yeah.
Every single person. Because you put it, the way you put it, just know when people be needing to pay it. You can only be paid if there's money to pay you.
I understand that, but I'm just saying, I have argued, sir, that, I mean, I'm not an agriculture person, right? And there's nothing wrong with agriculture, it's not my thing. Right? I've always argued that if you say to me, you're going to put me in a field to dig potatoes, so to speak.
Right? No, you won't be in a field to dig potatoes.
But let's assume that that's the role I had to play because that was what we had decided as a socialist economy that we were going to do. Right? I think that you're probably getting less out of me than you could get if you allowed me to sit at my computer and do the kind of work I would do normally. Because the earnings that I can generate, comparatively speaking, would be higher in that area. Not that there's anything wrong with the work.
When you operate on subsistence, I'm talking of a worst-case scenario. I'm not talking about...
Yeah, but we are not at a worst-case scenario because we are still trading. Even during COVID, we were still trading.
Right. We ain't reached there yet.
Right. So I'm saying that what's the benefit then of this conversation about a worst case scenario?
I'm talking about the people who are planning. Right. Okay? You always have to plan not only for the best and the middle ground, but you should plan
for the worst.
For the worst. Right. You should have a backup plan for the worst. Sure you know enough. Like how the president has got a bunker and this buddy's got a bunker and you don't know about it? Right? You have to have a backup plan.
Okay.
I would be far-fetched on that one. But then again, you understand that there are people here working and complaining about pensions. Okay? Is it true that a politician doing 2 terms, 8 years, and come out gets his pension right away?
When he's pensionable.
Oh, he has to wait till he's 60.
But of course, you can't get a pension before you're pensionable.
So the politician also has to wait till he's 67 to get the pension.
I don't know if he's 67. I think their pensionable age is a lot lower. I'm not sure, but I don't believe that their pensionable age is as high as that.
Their pensionable age is a lot lower.
Yeah, but the vast majority of politicians will come out of politics when they're 60 anyhow. So
they will?
Even if it was as low as 60, most of them will come out after 60.
No, someone will come out of politics as soon as they lose.
Yeah, but...
No, you do 2 terms and lose.
If you look at it, sir, for example, this group with Sinclair and those, they were able to get in and get back out in 10 years and lose. But generally speaking, to get 10 years, usually you would end up at 60.
Well, usually, but I felt like again, it's very young.
But anyhow, it is what it is. You would also, I believe, there's a gratuity thing in there as well. There's also a gratuity thing in there as well that they would probably get. Yeah.
And the gratuity you get... A normal person gets it then.
My understanding is that gratuity is payable immediately.
Immediately. So for everybody.
Mm. No. If you're qualified for gratuity, you get it immediately, while you may have to wait for your pension.
This is hard thing we're talking about. Qualified for gratuity. Three and a third or something like that.
Yeah. But sir, it's a different category, because remember their pension is different. So they get a different qualifying bar.
Right. But so why do we have these great differences for politicians? And not
because you
people.
Appreciate, sir, that a politician's work is different to the work that you or I would do.
But it's not harder.
It's different in the sense that you can be hired and fired, you know, within a 5-year period.
But a doctor's work is hard people's work are difficult.
Yeah, but the difference is that if you are a good doctor, you can be relied upon over a longer period. So you can have a doctor for 20, 30, 40 years.
So
the problem with a politician is that their work is such that they can lose their job in 5 years' time.
But they could, and sometimes they don't.
Well, sometimes they do.
A normal man can lose.
So the assumption is that a person who serves for 5 years shouldn't be entitled to a pension, but a person who serves for 10 should be. And I just think it's only reasonable that a person who serves for 10 should be able to get a little something to help take care of himself, because political work is also important work. Anyhow, sir, final word from you, because we're going to have to run.
Work is important work. Yeah. A mechanic is important work. Everybody's job is important.
I'm not saying, and I told you I would give you the last word, but please do not go away with this idea that I'm saying one job is more important. They're all important. I'm saying that the difference between the important work of a mechanic and the important work of a politician is that a mechanic is not normally fired. A mechanic can work for an extended period of time while earning a pension. A politician, however, is very volatile.
A company and get fired.
All right, fair enough.
Okay.
All right, sir, we're going to run.
Yeah, anyway, it was interesting.
It was, yes, it was. Thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate hearing from you. Lady has written me and she's saying that, Peter, teachers are not at home, quote unquote, sitting down. Teachers have been engaged with students throughout the time that schools have been closed. Classes continued for 11 plus exam and CXC exam, CSEC, CC, SLSC, and CBQs. They were also involved in training for G Suite to facilitate online teachers. How many teachers with exam classes had no Easter holidays and they have worked nonstop until now? So it would be untrue to say that teachers were at home sitting down. I believe I said teachers. What I should have said is there were some teachers who would not have been working. And there were also some classes of public servants that, because of the nature of their job, not their own decision, the nature of their job, they were not working during that period. Down to Brass Tacks, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, Peter.
Yes, good afternoon.
How are you?
I'm great. And yourself?
Are you okay, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I was on a little bit, and I'm holding in here the gentleman speak about Christianity. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to say this, and then I'm going to move on to my point. I would advise everybody to read the Bible for themselves, mm-hmm. and as they live, and they will recognize. The Word of God says his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made. So we stand as human beings that even if you don't ever see a Bible, we can still have appreciation for God. And as you said, Christ Jesus himself, people have used that name throughout the ages to do some great atrocities to each other. So read the Bible for yourself.
But if you read,
we know the church did a lot of evil to the people, especially, we know the Catholic Church did a lot of things that they should
have done. The Anglican Church, too.
They branch off from that. But read the Bible for yourself, though.
But if you read the Bible for yourself.
I know.
But if he read the Bible for himself and he come upon these passages of which I was speaking, you don't feel that causes pause? You're comfortable reading a Bible that tells you that it's all right to keep slaves and that you can sell your daughter into slavery? You're comfortable with that as a Christian?
Nobody never said that.
It's in there, ma'am. Come on.
It's all right to sell your daughter into slavery. Nobody said that.
Ma'am, go and read Leviticus.
It was a different type of slavery.
But how do you mean it's a different type of slavery, ma'am? Come off it.
It wasn't like this one.
Ma'am, how do you mean a different kind of slavery that's got better and worse slavery?
Peter, you know, right? I think you know.
I don't know. I know that servitude can be good.
Let me tell you this one before we move on. Back then, I understand, if you are a slave in a home, some person's home, right? Most likely these persons were people of means that had slaves. You know, that master didn't have children, that slave would inherit everything. It was quite a different type of...
And you're comfortable with that?
I'm not saying that.
Okay, I just want to be clear.
Right, we are progressing as human beings.
No, because if you deny my humanity and you say I belong to somebody else, I don't care where you're going to die and leave me. The fact is that my humanity is denied. And you know, my challenge has always been, I don't understand why Christians just can't come and say clearly, look, the Bible got in lies. Those things are not true. Full stop. Instead of engaging in this conversation that suggests, one slavery is different to the next slavery and it was different in those times. It's not about that. It's not correct. It's not true. It's not fair.
Before I get cut, those are facts, and we are living in the time of grace. This is Christ's time. You look back to see where we came from, but we can't stick there and say it happened and therefore we choked the baby with the bathwater. That is what I'm saying. Anyway,
I'm holding myself back. Anyhow, you carry on.
All right. The lady that called in and said she's from the States, right? She said that she think we're not supporting. We're not supporting.
She didn't call in. She sent me a WhatsApp message.
Uh-huh. And I want to know, we are concerned, if not all, many of us are concerned what is going on over there. As a person called in and said, we have relatives over there, we have nephew, we have nieces, we have uncles, we have persons over there. And it's a fact that so many young men now, especially men, women don't even want the sons to leave the house. Okay? They don't even want the children. You can imagine living in that kind of way. So therefore, I see this thing like, okay, it was coming every night. This is a combination of lots of things that were done onto the black race, and it was even perpetuated by some of the other races. Don't fool yourself, the Chinese, the Indian, the Japanese. And those people are coming out now and acknowledging that these things are wrong. So if we invest in these things that we're jumping on by a wagon, we shouldn't have anything to do with it, we are so wrong.
What's your view on Nelson's statue?
Right, let me finish off this, right? This baby was growing for a while and is now coming to birth. And we have to put in our hands to help this baby to be born so that this baby wouldn't die a natural death and we have to start all over again. This is a time for change. And I'm not saying go there and riot and break down and lick up, but I agree with peaceful demonstration and letting our governments know that we are concerned about things that are happening that we can't live with, right? All over the world, and say our governments, everybody. Such as what is happening. You know that same thing before black guys get killed again, right? So it's like...
Since what?
Stopping. Since George Floyd, about four...
Right. No. I don't mean... I'm talking about what's happening here.
What's happening here in
Barbados and the Caribbean. So we agree with the American thing. We dealt with that. So I'm saying bring it home now, and I'm asking you.
Bringing it home.
Do you think what lessons can we learn and what issues can we address in Barbados that result in the same unfairness?
We have issues as well. A lot of things that happen overseas and not here. The laws, the World Health Organization, all those organizations with the letters behind them, you know, they don't, sometimes as small nations, developing countries, we don't get the kind of attention we need from those international bodies. We have to look at the franchising of the black man, even here in Barbados. We have to look at how the banks treat our people when they go to get loans. There's so much things we have to look at to get things on a level playing field. We are not operating on a level playing field either because we follow the way of the world. And maybe it's because we think that we will get victimized. But it's so we need the islanders and so on.
We are in a situation where we are in a black country. We are not in a racial minority. We are in a racial majority. We have control of our politics, economics, everything. And I'm asking you, if you can identify any specific injustices that you believe are meted out to the less powerful, that we can learn. Because what I've been stressing with this issue is that this is an issue where we can learn about how injustice works, and we can take steps to fix those injustices. So I've identified in the course of the program several injustices that I believe we ought to address. And I'm asking you, can you identify with any of these?
I just identify many of them. I continue to hear Black people say that they don't get the commitment and the help they need, especially trying to establish a business. We are not encouraged to have our own businesses. We are encouraged to work for somebody. Even our secondary education, which needs revamping, we are encouraged.
But I can agree with that, though. So who is stopping us from opening our own businesses?
First of all, you ever try opening a business in Barbados?
Why you open a business in Barbados? What are you talking about? I'm the director in the business.
Peter, I see you as privilege.
I don't know if I agree.
I'm a normal black person out there.
All right. Well, let's look at the normal black people out there, right? Mm-hmm. You go into Bridgetown on any day, and you can see in Temple Yard black businessmen that have been running businesses there for generations.
Mm-hmm.
They're making shoes, they're making chains and whatnot. You step outside and you go along Cheapside, and you will see people running businesses there. There's a lady opposite here that makes a shoemaker that repairs shoes. She's been running that business for as long as anybody can remember.
Mm-hmm.
The point I'm making is that we have these delusions that we are not facilitated regarding business, and that's not true.
It is not delusion.
The Nation Corporation that owns this station is one of the most successful black businesses in the Caribbean.
Founded by privileged people again.
But you keep saying that, but ultimately, if your concern is that you're going to say that black businesses aren't working, I'm saying that the evidence to support that in Barbados is flimsy.
Because
then you have people like Leo Leacock, who is now passed and so on. You have businesses like that, like Trident Insurance. It is not a small fly-by-night operation, you know? And there are several. There are several black businessmen in Barbados that have done exceedingly well.
You know, right, that once you were said of the Asians before.
The what?
You know, we call it Indians and Syrians and other persons, right?
Mm-hmm.
After a while, quite a while, we get some black businesses in Swan Street. All right? They're going to start belonging to a black lady, a black guy, and things moving. You know what? Destroy those businesses. They rank, though. And you know that when an Asian or they want people rank those buildings to get it for half the price that we have to pay for it.
That sounds speculative, ma'am. I don't know that something that's evidence-based.
Listen, I do not speak.
I don't know if it's evidence-based.
I do not speak of things I don't know of.
So when you had years ago, you had a business called Annie Wilson that was on the corner right there, so going in town, and you're going by Fairchild Street. It was right there on the corner. The biggest black businesses, one of the first black businesses. He ain't paying nobody rent. He owned the building. Well, what happened? Who you going to blame for his failure? Ma'am?
He failed, or he passed on to his funny son self?
I don't know, but I'm saying that, as far as I know, it's not there now. But you see, you're saying to me that you're always tracing it back to the fact that somebody owned and the person poked out somebody. Hey, and I'm saying to you that there's no evidence to support that, because I can identify for you a black business, which is Annie Wilson, that was there, is no longer there. And to the best of my knowledge, you owned the building.
Anyway, someday he was quite an old man, which he leave for his son, and now you understand his son sell the business because he don't want to.
But maybe that happened to a lot of other black businesses whose children decided, I'm not interested in doing something like this.
But listen.
Anyhow, ma'am, we're going to have to run. I'm going to leave you a final word on this matter, and then we'll go. Go ahead, ma'am.
A lot of things need to be looked into concern of us.
Mm-hmm.
We bring in those mega stores, mega hair stores, 1, 2, 3, 4 of them, and all the people that used to sell the little one-door store and make little money can't get in a hair sale, so they had to shut down. So a lot of things need looking into. Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot. The conversation now revolves around the ability to buy hair. I'm growing money, so maybe I can sell in a year's time, I can sell some of my hair for people to put on their head. Down to Brass Sox, 4341790. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, welcome.
Yes, sir. How are you doing?
Hi, good, sir. It's Mohammed Nasser.
Hey, Mohammed. How are you doing?
Yeah, pretty good, man. Nice
tell me about black business, man.
No, I didn't call you to discuss black business.
I thought you called me to put this lady right.
Maybe next week I will call you to discuss black business. This is what I'm going to ask you. Is it fair to use the value of a property that the government value for taxes? Because, you know, a government can obviously value, don't put a value at all on a property. If a government believes that they can get the resources they want before putting in taxes on a property, they could just consider the property tax as zero. Am I right?
No, I don't know about that. I just assume...
There are, countries in the world that do not allow people to pay property tax. Am I not right?
Right, precisely.
So therefore, my point I'm saying to you is then, any government, including our government, do not truly value your property, because if they really value some of these properties, the people will run over Barbados. If the government want to raise finance to do things which they have to do from time to time, they might decide to put property tax on property and put it at a particular price, but that's not the true value of the property. Would you agree or not agree?
I have found that most valuations at land tax give are relatively low.
Right, okay.
I've seen a few extreme instances. I can think of one in particular where it was probably three times what the house was valued at. But okay. Generally speaking, I've found that they're coming on the low side.
That's okay. But
which is a blessing for most people, because most people won't be able to pay the tax otherwise.
Well, so me and you agree on that
right.
point. So in truth and in fact, I don't care whether the government take over people's properties or not. It is not good for us to be saying that the land tax is value at X, so there's not a fair price for the property. That is what the government do that, because the government know within that particular range they can get what they want. So I'm not saying the government can't come and take over my property, your property, anybody's property. But I am saying that if the property owner is to say that it's too low, we cannot say, oh, well, the government value it at that. Because that's not really a fair price. That's not the truth.
But if we're talking about the same thing, though, the amount of money that government offers about twice what the valuation was.
Well, I don't know. No, but that's the property. Remember, always remember, me and you on the same page here.
Right.
The government can come and value my property or your property.
Right.
And we could protest, and the government, if the government decides, well, we can give you a little more, but you still feel you deserve more. For instance,
go to court.
That lovely place that you have there looking over the harbor.
Mm-hmm.
You could buy that what is yours, but the government said no.
Right.
We are going to take it over for X. No, I am saying that the government could do that, but I am not saying we should not be criticizing the owner for saying that they should get more.
But then no problem. No, but if you use me as an example, if government, I would be glad actually if they come and tell me.
Yeah.
If they call and tell me they can give me a piece of change for it, I would tell them go along. But yeah, no, I mean, if you are not happy with the offer that has been made, for example, if you are saying that the land tax is, let's say, $50,000, and you pay on $50,000, but then when it comes to time to compulsorily acquire, they say they want to pay you $15,000, you say, no, the valuation is worth more than that. You get an opinion of a valuer, and a valuer gives you a value that you think is more attractive, like let's say $100,000. Right? A government says, we will meet you halfway and pay you $75,000. And I say, I am not happy with that. And I do have the right to go to court. And I have the right to have the court determine whether or not the valuation, which valuation is the appropriate one and what money I should get. Having said that, however, I have a right to go to court, which means that government also has a right to say to me, until such time as when the court decides, you get no money.
No, I agree with that.
Right.
But all I am saying,
so we on the same page, right? True.
I know that. I want Barbadian people to stop believing that what the government value a property at is the true value of the property. That's the value that the government value it at. That's not necessary. So, like you said, you go, you get your values, and then you go to court, and the court make the decision.
Valuers have different opinions, and I mean sometimes people shop around for valuation. Because they know that some valuers go on the high side and some valuers go on the low side.
Yeah, now the next thing. Right. Do you believe that people ever vote for an opposition or the vote against a government?
No, they vote for government. They vote against the government, yeah. I think in some instances they actually vote for an opposition too. So I would say in vast majority of instances they vote out of government, but in a lot of cases they see something attractive that they like and they vote in. To me, a huge swing, like a landslide, is usually a combination of both factors. I don't like what is there, and I like what is on the other side. So there's a push-pull, and as a result, you get a landslide.
But Mr. Wicker, me, you're on the same page.
Yeah.
I'm off, I like
don't worry, I might become a Muslim, too.
Peter, me, you're on the same page. What I'm saying, though,
because we also agree on pork, so
yeah,
that's a good start.
What I'm saying is that my intelligence tells me from years of knocking around politicians and politics, that people don't ever vote for an opposition. They vote against the party that is the government that's running the affairs, because they're not happy with it. Now, what happened now, you might have a lot of good personalities and everything, or great people in the opposition, so they know that when they get rid of the government, they will bring a class appeal that most likely will be better than the government that got rid of. And if that government starts to fail, the new one, And then the final appeal, they vote against that again. So my argument is that people vote against the government, never vote for an opposition. But you have a point there that there are personalities in opposition that people might like, and regardless of how good the government is, they may still vote for that personality, but they won't vote for the whole government.
The other thing I want you to consider quickly is that in a situation like ours, people may not vote for the DLP opposition, but they may vote for a opposition in the sense that they may say, this is a situation where I really feel I'm voting just because we need to have somebody else in parliament. I think that that is an affliction that will be a fairly awesome force in the next election, where a lot of people are going to go out there and say, I am not voting necessarily for Verla de Pisa, let's assume she's leading the party, but I'm just voting because I want the lopsidedness to come to an end. And that's going to be, to me, one of the biggest challenges that Prime Minister Motley will have to strategize over.
I can ask you another question. You were making some points just about politicians.
Mm-hmm.
What is a politician?
A politician is a person who is involved in the business of politics on a professional basis.
Okay, so
in other words, they run for government, they run for office, and so on.
Okay, so therefore, if a man or a woman run for parliament and win the seat for 5 years and then they lose, why should they get pension? What, they're not politician no more when they lose the seat?
But not for 5 years, but for 10.
Right, so therefore I said that because I want you to explain just now when you were explaining just now to the gentleman about the work of a politician. And I say that because I want people to understand that you're only a politician when you're in a seat.
Well, I should have said the work of a parliamentarian.
Right. No problem, Mr. I got a lot of respect for you. And I want to discuss with you one day about the Bible. Because me, you can say we have plans with that Bible. Don't mind, I'm a Muslim. Let me tell you, the Bible is one of the most dangerous books on earth when it comes to black people. But we'll deal with that another time.
Sorry.
No, let me ask you another question.
Mr. Dasson, we got three more people that want to get in, you know.
I'll go on this.
You give it. All right, thanks. Okay. It was good chatting with you. We don't get to speak enough, unfortunately, on this program. I'm back on Monday, so hopefully we can talk then. Brass Stacks, good afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome to Brass Stacks. We have about 4 minutes remaining on the program, so let's see what we can get in. Good afternoon and welcome. Okay, we lost that call as well. Good afternoon, welcome down to Brass Stacks. Yes, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, you really feel, as a young Barbadian, 27 years old, you really feel that we care about Nelson and what to do with Nelson. What we care about is when a man kick off a door, go in a house. If me and a man got a problem, if you should come after me.
Mm-hmm.
But you can come in a house and lick down my mother. Then there's nothing. We got two mothers now that they involved in no crime. Them is the things that worry me.
Died by who?
By black people who didn't kill the boy.
So they were victims of crime? Is it state-sponsored terrorism?
I talk about the two mothers that get killed right here in Barbados.
Right. No, I'm just saying that we have to be careful because in this issue, we're trying to look at ways in which the state is the sponsor of terror. And I don't know that those will meet that standard.
No, I'm just saying that them is the things that we really worry about.
So you don't really care about Nelson one way or the other?
Nelson never do me nothing. If he pass the money, he can shoot at me. He ain't do me nothing.
So you feel he can stay?
Huh?
You feel he can stay?
I ain't care what to do with it. He's no problem to me, that's what he's saying.
But do you think that Nelson's presence reflects an expression of something that is you as a Barbadian? Do you think that he expresses, in the way that Arabaro and Grantley Adams do you think that he expresses something of you?
I don't really respect statues in the whole. I ain't really care about the statue.
Okay,
I tell you what I really care about. I care about people that are killing black people, and not just only black people, they're killing mothers.
Mm-hmm.
And these people that are killing mothers, I ain't gonna want anybody to kill the mother. Mm-hmm. So we got a problem with that. If you and a man got an issue, you ain't gonna come in the man's house. We ain't living there forever. Leave the man by the streets. He can come and kick off the man door and get me and kill the mother.
Right.
If you got something.
Very nice, sir.
That's number one.
Thanks. You have a number two because we have another call.
I got one more. Let me
go ahead. Yeah.
It is time enough. Just stop beat him down straight. They beat him on down to the ground already.
All right.
You know what I'm trying to do? Point a pair of gloves on he, and point a pair on you. My boy,
Point taken, sir.
You got to stop.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Point taken. Let's take the last call. Good afternoon and welcome. You're on Down to Brass Tacks. Last caller. Good afternoon.
Yeah, am I on?
Yes, you are, sir.
This is wonderful. Never been the last and always the first. All right, the first thing I want you to do for
me. The last shall be first and the first shall be last.
Yes, that's right. Ask the water authority. I went to the District B police station week before and again last week. And there's a pipe outside. Right outside the police station, I think it's one of them blue pipes. That the police tell me to call the waterworks on numerous occasions, and nobody yet ain't come to fix the pipe. Mm-hmm. Peter, when I park my vehicle next to the police station there, I can hear the water spewing out. Mm-hmm. Ask the water authority to go up there and fix the pipe, please. Right outside the District B police station.
But you're asking them no, because your voice is being reflected across the hills and fields of Barbados and abroad.
Yeah,
so
I want them to do that. Right. Because, like I said, when I speak to the police, they say they call several times, and still nobody from the waterworks ain't come and do it. So I doing it as well.
Maybe what you should start doing is calling them by the correct name, which is the Water Authority.
The Water Authority. The Waterworks were out of business years ago. Outside the police station.
When Larry Mears was a lad. And that was a long time ago.
Peter, I forgot another minute.
Yes, sir.
Now, this question of the Bible. You and I had this conversation in brief sometime before. On the BBC on Sunday mornings, you know there's a program called Question Time. You spend a lot of time in Europe.
I listen to it from time to time, but I haven't listened recently. Yeah.
Question Time took the Bible, the for, the against, the take all the different people that they could find and put them to sit down in an audience and discuss the Bible. It was so much fire that you wouldn't believe it. Because you had strong people like yourself. They had even stronger people like, let's say, the Prime Minister. They had the clerics. They had everybody in that program. And I can put it to you. The people that you would deem to be the lesser people in that audience won the argument because they used the same acronyms that you and the same questions that you are asking to decipher a problem. Christians that don't understand what yourselves, what Mr. Nasser, what I myself is grappling with, the individuals will not have a conversation with you. The Christians, the so-called Christians, decide to paraphrase the Bible, preach what suits them, and have no general understanding that as I think you think, and Mr. Nasser just say he think, it is one of the most cruel books that ever happened to mankind.
What one of the things I want to say to you on that, though,
under it is the black people.
Yeah. No, what I want to say to you on that, though, is that I've found that when I am in those conversations with the Europeans, there are not a lot of literalists in Europe. And that's the reason why those kinds of conversations are usually a lot more grounded in one could argue, in academic substance.
Oh, yes.
So when you try to look for a person who literally believes that the Lord created the earth in 7 days, even within the bowels of the church, the Anglican church, you're not going to find that person. Because those guys come out and tell you straight, look, we don't believe that. Our understanding is that the Bible was a book that was written for a time. And they believe it has value, but ultimately they don't believe that those things actually happen. When you frame the conversation in that way, I find it easier to engage with. But when you have someone who tells me, look, you know, that this actually did happen, then it makes it hard to argue, because how do you argue with someone
difficult.
Like that?
And again, the origins, when you listen to the history and the origins of what happened with the Bible and so on, and how it was given to the black people to control them, to give them something to hold on to, and rob them of everything that they ever had.
It's painful.
You would want to, when you look at Africa, Peter, and you look at parts of the Caribbean, you would not believe the academia that is in Africa. Serious academia, but I guess people still see Africa as little boys and girls hungry and starved and hungry, all about the road ain't doing nothing, even though there's still aspects of that still exist in the vast land that is Africa. So like I said, it's got, look, the conversation, the time coming to an end now, so I ain't got a great time to communicate with you about this, but Africa is a place that developing, that has developed. It is not no longer about hungry boys and girls running about, but the book itself that is deemed the Bible was given to the black people and robbed them of the identity, robbed them of everything that they ever had in their life. But you know what? We are living, we still kicking.
All right, sir, thanks a lot for calling and for bringing the program to a close. We say a full stop. Certainly want to thank you and all the other callers for making the program as exciting. Let me apologize to many of you who felt that I kept people on the line for too long. Fridays are normally a bit slow, so I often feel the luxury of being able to speak for a little longer sometimes with regular callers. But I hope that you enjoyed the show nonetheless, and I hope that you'll join me again on Monday when I'm here again for the same time between 9 until 2. Special thanks to Dennis Johnson for supporting us in technical matters, and we make way now for Mr. Larry Mears as we move into a new phase of broadcasting today. We do hope you all have a great weekend and see you back on Monday. And don't brass tacks.